Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here and to give you this talk. So as you have heard probably on Tuesday and also, of course, in the last talk with the previous speaker, there's quite at the moment some debate on what are the fundamental mechanisms which drive this efficient transport in this biological system, in this photosynthetic light harvesting complexes. And today my take on this discussion, my contribution to this discussion will be a comparison between two potential candidate mechanisms for this efficient energy transport. And when doing this, I would like to put an emphasis on the potential role of quantum coherence in this system. So this work has been done during my PhD in Freiburg, Germany, together with my advisors, Thomas Wellens and Andreas Buchleiter. So quite recently, in 2007, there were experiments we provided for the first time astonishing evidence for the presence of quantum coherence in biological system that is in the so-called Fanner-Matthews-Olsen, and short, the FMO protein primer, which is employed by a species called the green sulfur bacteria. And this FMO complex, as you've already heard before in the last talk, is some kind of energy shuttle. So what it does is, if you consider like a event of transfer processes, so what it does is, if a photon gets absorbed by one molecular machine called the antenna complex, the excitation energy absorbed hops over to this FMO trimer, where it's then carried by the FMO complex to another molecular machine, the reaction center, where this energy, this excitation energy, is eventually transformed into chemical energy, which is used by the cell for fuel. So because this green sulfur bacteria lives in rather complicated environment, so it is living at the bottom of the sea or in deep lakes, it is rather relies on the efficiency of this energy transport process. And as it turns out, this efficiency is extremely high. So 95% of these excitation essentially reach this reaction center. And this efficiency is so high that it's hard to explain by textbook classical theories. So in view of this newly detected dynamical quantum coherence, one is tempted to suspect that this quantum coherence has something to do with this high efficiency. And so one might ask the question, is there an incentive for nature to employ this dynamical quantum coherence? So what we know essentially is that this energy transfer is mediated by 7 or probably 8 molecular sites, each of which having 2 discrete electronic energy levels which are important in this transfer process. So from a rather simplistic point of view, this complicated molecular structure, this FMO trimer, or one monomer of this trimer, I should rather say, can be abstracted into a network of dipolar sites, so of the spins essentially. And this network is embedded into a surrounding, very complicated protein scaffold, which provides stiffness to the structure, and also defines some highly complicated, non-trivial, potentially noisy environment, but which, as seen by the experiments, even at room temperature, keep the coherence, preserve the coherence, at least at the time scale of this transfer process. So, as advertised, I'd like to do this comparison of two candidate mechanisms for this efficiency. And here on the left-hand side, we have the dephasing-assisted transport, and on the right-hand side, we have the quantum coherence-induced transport. So I'd like to start with this one first, because it has been previously addressed in the literature. So this energy transport in the systems is commonly studied or simulated via an effective electronic Hamiltonian. This electronic Hamiltonian has been determined, has been derived from structural information and also by means of quantum chemical calculations. And this effective Hamiltonian is one of the best models we have for the excitonic dynamic in the system. However, if one propagates the system coherently, one will find that this effective Hamiltonian predicts the suppression of transport due to destructive quantum interference. And now the idea, or in view of this coupling to other degrees of freedom, so vibrations in this system. It's very obvious, or it's probably natural to assume that the bath, so these other degrees of freedom, plays also a role in this energy transport. And the idea of this method, or of this scheme here, of this noise-assisted transport method, is that this noise, this bath, is optimized in such a way that it helps to reduce this detrimental quantum interference, this quantum localization effects present in this system, and thereby enhances transport. So whereas this here emphasizes the negative aspects of quantum coherence, the other scheme I'd like to show you, this quantum interference-induced transport scheme, stresses the positive aspects of quantum coherence. So one of the key features of quantum coherence is that it is very sensitive to the parameters of the system. So one of the hallmarks of coherence is, for instance, the universal conductance fluctuations in solid states. And as good as it is, this effective Hamiltonian comes with some uncertainties. It has some error bars. And within these error bars, there's indeed room for a scenario where the system, so not essentially the bath, but the system itself, is optimized in such a way that it allows for both coherent dynamics and efficient energy transport. And in this scenario here, what I would like to show you now is that this scenario is indeed superior in terms of efficiency to this Diffévy noise-assisted scenario. So how do we do this? So our results follow from a robust approach. So we are not using this effective Hamiltonian. Instead, we're defining a universal class of random networks. And one of these networks is shown here on the right. So what we're doing essentially is we assume that at each point in time, there's at most a single excitation in the system. And this excitation is injected at the side in and has to arrive at the side out. And these two dedicated sides, in and out, they define the poles of a d-dimensional sphere, and within this sphere, we are uniformly randomly distributing the positions of additional intermediate sides. And the interaction between two sides, this is mediated by the double-dot interaction, which scales as the inverse third power of the distance of the sides. So if we allow now the sides to become very, very close, then it could happen that this interaction potential here is extremely large due to this inverse power here. And this introduces then additional localization features which we would like to suppress. So what we're doing is we define a minimal distance, R min, for these positions, and thereby can control the degree of this pair-induced localization. There is a reference time for the dynamics of this system, and this dynamics time, reference time capital T, or benchmark time capital T, this is essentially the time the excitation needs to go over to the output side, given the absence of all the other intermediate sides. And then the addition of these intermediate sides, this will then allow transfer times which are faster than this reference time T. So this is rather benchmark. So to account for the processing of this excitation at the reaction center, which is sitting at the end of this FMO complex, we're introducing an energy sink at this side out, where then the excitation is drained off from the system with a certain rate, capital gamma. And for all members of our networks, the following will happen. So the population of the sink, the charge of the sink, P here, this will converge to 1 if T goes to infinity. So and the efficiency benchmark, this is essentially the same as Professor Chow showed you, is then the average transfer time, which is essentially, or is exactly the excitation value of the time at which the excitation leaves the system. So, and the statistics within this class of networks, of this transfer time, you can see here below. So what we're doing is, for this plot here, we're using three-dimensional sphere, 7 nodes with equal local energies. We're using an isotropic interaction, so which only depends, to make it simpler, essentially, it's not crucial, to only depend on the mutual distances, but not on the on the orientations of the sites. And we're using a rather large exclusion volume, so here our min is 30% of the distance between in and out. So this is rather large. And what we see is the following. So here on the x-axis we have the logarithmic scale, the transfer time, and on the y-axis we have the histogram, so the probability density for the transfer time. As you can see, the graph here starts abruptly, reaches a maximum, and then falls off algebraically. So this means that the density, the probability density, is a power law in the transfer time, and the scaling here is t to the power of minus roughly 1.5. And what this means is that one can expect extremely large transfer times. And this is due to destructive interference, or, as said in a previous talk, due to these orthogonal subspaces. And because due to this algebraic decay, one cannot define or the mean and the variance of the transfer time on a properly defined, the ill-defined. And to assess a typical value, define a typical value, we use the median, which is just dividing the ensemble in two parts, each of which having the same number of occurrences of events. So there's a better and a worse half of configurations. And as you can see here, this median is at least one order of magnitude larger than the most probable value, so here the maximum, and let's say almost two orders of magnitude larger than the shortest transfer times observed here in this Monte Carlo simulation. So coming back now to this comparison between these two candidate mechanisms, so essentially the idea now of this noise-assisted transport is to introduce coupling to a bath. So this calculation here was completed without a bath. And we're doing this here with a rather simple model, so we're just considering dephasing. So just Markovian, very simple Markovian noise, which just scrambles the phases and thereby attenuates the coherence in the system with certain rates here, gamma I. And the challenge now for this method is now to find the best gammas for a given configuration, essentially to suppress this long tail here, to get rid of this algebraic decay. Because then you will find that this median goes over to much smaller values. So this is the dephasing system transport, and in the quantum interference-induced transport scheme, we just have to find the optimal spatial configuration. So that means the configuration which has a transfer time sitting here, or much smaller transfer time. So with a T optimal, which is very, very small compared to this median. And here I've shown, I've plotted three examples for such optimal configurations. So what we did is we just grabbed a revolutionary algorithm from the shelf and calculated here the optimal positions for these sites to get the best transfer time. So here for a sync train, right, which is rather large, one gets a very boring configuration. So if the sync train is too large, these configurations generally tend to be one-dimensional. And if one reduces this train a little bit, then one can see that we have quite clear deviations from this boring scheme. And if one now includes even more sets, so this was 7, here's 12, one can see rather beautiful structures appearing here. And now we have everything what we need to discuss the topography or the landscape of both transports and noise. And what we've been doing here is the same as before. So we're using now 7 nodes in 3 dimensions with equal on-site energies and isotropic interaction and this large exclusion volume. And here in this problem, we have now 3 time scales. So we have this reference time for the dynamics. We have the sink drain time, which is just the inverse of this capital gamma. And then we have the dephasing time. And the dephasing time is now new because this is now including the environment. And this dephasing time tells us the time scale at which the environment has a bearing on the transport dynamics. And here we're doing homogeneous dephasing. So all the rates gamma I are now equal. And the dephasing rate here is shown here on the x-axis. So we have your logarithmic scale and going from essentially vanishing dephasing to extremely large dephasing. On the y-axis we have the transfer time, also in logarithmic scale. And now the histogram, so this probability density, is now encoded in the grayscale to get this landscape picture. So that means that the darker the area is, the more likely it is to find configurations which transfer times in these areas. So first, I would like to draw your attention to this decreasing line here. So this is a matching condition between the transfer time and this dephasing time scale. So that means that configurations here in this area, so above this line, they have transfer times where the coherence is gone. So this means that the dephasing has destroyed all the coherences. And here, configurations below this decreasing line, they show transfer times which are much smaller than this dephasing time scale. That means here, these are the only configurations where one can claim that coherence indeed has an influence, can really enhance the dynamics, the transport dynamics. So the blue curve, this one here, this is the median, so it tells you something about the typical configurations. As you can see, for typical configuration, we reproduce earlier results, so that it means that with increasing coupling to the environment, with increasing noise, the transfer in, so the typical transfer time gets better, so it decreases here by orders of magnitude, then it reaches an optimal point, and then it grows again, and this is due to this Zeno freezing, so it just increases linearly with the dephasing. But now note that this optimal regime here, this optimal dephasing rate is well inside this incoherent regime. That means here for these transfer times the coherence is long gone. So this means first you have to destroy all the coherence in your system, and then you can expect high enhancements of your transport. On the other hand, if you now look at this red line here, this one, which is just the transfer time of this configuration, so this optimal configuration here, we see that first, of course, we have, because it's optimized, we have the smallest transfer time, and then it stays optimal for all dephasing range which still allow for coherent dynamics. And then if we go in this incoherent regime, we see that other configurations, so here this brown line shows you the minimal achievable transfer times in this regime here. So there are other configurations which now show a better transport than this formal optimal one. So this plot tells us in essence that in this dephasing assisted scenario, one cannot hope to achieve transfer times which are as small as those achieved for these optimal configurations, but this then needs vanishing dephasing. So what do we learn from this? So as we have seen, so most configurations are indeed per se inefficient, so that means they can be assisted quite dramatically by noise, but this happens at the expense of coherence. So first we have to get rid of the coherence, of this destructive interference as well, and then we can expect that the configurations get better by this dephasing. On the other hand, we showed that there are these optimal configurations, and these are rare, and one can expect from them that they're the most efficient ones, so they're much more efficient than these configurations which are assisted by noise. So the punchline is now the following. So if we assume now that in nature, or nature tries to optimize the efficiency of these complexes, so this FMO complex, then these configurations, these optimal configurations, have an evolutionary advantage. So this means one can draw the conclusion that if indeed coherence plays a role in this FMO complex, then it will not be due to this noise, but instead due to this optimal configuration. So that means that FMO has to be optimized with respect to constructive quantum interference. And that's all. Thank you very much.